Hello and welcome to a Burkamp Wonderland and Arsenal podcast. I'm Gooney Gimley and tonight my guests are, first up, he's got the world's worst beard in sports entertainment. It's John Welsh. Hello, John.
Thanks for that, Gim. I really appreciate that, considering some of the beards on our podcast.
I haven't seen Danny's effort on the radio show, which is also being recorded as we're doing this, isn't it?
Yeah, it is tonight. Bit of a double whammy tonight.
Yeah, so hopefully this will be out about 1 a.m. and the listeners should love it. Next up, ABW's resident pirate, it's Chris Carpenter. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Gim. How you doing, mate? All right?
Yeah, not too bad. We brought you in for your knowledge on foreign football.
This is where it all goes horribly wrong. But yeah, happy to be here. Thank you, Neil.
Yes, lovely. And our special guest tonight, it's Raffi Honigstein. Hello, Raffi.
Hello.
It's such a pleasure to have you back. The first time we ever recorded with you about 5 years ago, it never recorded, and it was one of the best shows I think we've ever done. And we've had you back a couple of times since then, and it's always a pleasure. So thank you for coming back tonight.
Pleasure's all mine.
Oh, wonderful. First of all, we'll get right into proceedings then and talk about Aubameyang. We should tell the listeners by this point we know that we've lost to Swansea. So, Raffi, what do you think Aubameyang can bring to this side that we don't already have?
First of all, I would say that Aubameyang is a perfect Arsenal striker. He's quick. He loves to play on the break. He loves it on the deck. Can play on the shoulder. Can do the little intricate movements in the final third, 1-2s. All the kind of stuff that Arsenal, at their very best, can bring to the table. And I think he is definitely an upgrade to what you've got already. My only question is, you know, the upgrade warrants such a big move, or could Arsenal have looked at other areas in the squad to strengthen? That's my one problem with this deal, because you're buying a very good striker, but you're effectively killing another one, or at least sort of undermining him quite badly, and possibly at this point losing a third one. So I'm just not sure that overall it's such a straightforward deal. But just the player itself, I absolutely love. I've been admiring him for a long time, and I've said this before in a different context, but I never understood why Wenger didn't go for him initially when he was available for 40 million euros for Saint-Etienne. He was the second best striker in Ligue 1 that year, behind Giroud, I think. He went for Giroud. I think Aubameyang is the better striker.
That's fair enough. A lot of people are speculating on Twitter just how we're going to play the two together. Do you think that there's a possibility that they could play two up top and have Aubameyang and Lacazette as our main two strikers?
It's a possibility, but I just don't see where the space for them is going to come from. You know, they both need space. You put both of them together, it doesn't really strike me as a very promising partnership. I mean, they're both great players, and I'm sure they're intelligent enough and versatile enough to play in a variety of positions. Of course, Aubameyang initially was a winger who's been made into a centre forward over the last 3 years, very successfully so. Lacazette, in theory, could play out wide, but they are very much the same type of striker. There's no getting away from that. So I can understand why perhaps Van Mislintat was saying, you know what, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. There isn't much demand for Aubameyang this January. He wants to leave. Dortmund want to sell. We cannot miss out on him. But in terms of Arsenal's immediate needs and also the ability to play somebody very strong in the Europa League, of course, he doesn't tick many boxes.
No. And is there a reason you can tell us as to why Aubameyang is moving? Obviously, we've seen that he's kicked up a little bit of a fuss in Germany. And there are Arsenal fans out there that are going, OK, we've just got rid of one stroppy player. Is there the chance that we're getting another one in? So could you give us a bit of a brief on that situation and just why it is he's moving at this point?
OK, so Aubameyang has not been a model professional. He's not that type of guy. He's not a bad guy either. He's not a guy that people didn't enjoy playing with. He was never really unpleasant. The opposite, you know, lovely guy, easy to get along with. And in the past, over the last, shall we say, 2 years, 2-3 years or so, I think Dortmund indulged in him to a certain extent. He was indispensable. And they looked the other way when he was late for training, when he didn't show up at appointments. It's only in the last few weeks where the climate or the attitude of his had changed, whereas in the past he would miss training or not show up for a press interview and be very apologetic and say, you know, I'm really sorry, I've overslept or whatever, I wasn't aware that this is happening. He now started saying, you know what, just fine me, I don't care anymore. So at that point, of course, you lose the respect of the dressing room, you lost the respect of the club, and they were quite adamant that it was very difficult to get him reintegrated into the squad. And we're a little bit disappointed, I think, that he pushed things that hard, because they were happy to sell him. Last summer, they were happy to sell him. This summer, I think they could have had a much more amicable parting of the ways if they'd known in advance that Arsenal were interested in him. So I think they put Aubameyang and his entourage pushed things much harder than was necessary.
And is there anything you can fill us in on the deal itself? Obviously, there's been a bit of a transfer merry-go-round, like Batshuayi's got to go to Dortmund to free up Aubameyang, but Chelsea have got to replace. So can you fill us in a little bit more about that and where the clubs are in terms of getting those deals done?
Well, I mean, all I can tell you is that Dortmund releasing Aubameyang has always been contingent on them being able to get somebody in. And that's why we've had that impasse in the first place. Dortmund's options were either Giroud, who was, I think, reluctant to go there, or Michy Batshuayi, which then made Giroud a target for Chelsea as a knock-on effect. So all I can tell you is that Dortmund would have not sanctioned a deal, and I don't think would have let Aubameyang go to London for a medical if they didn't feel that they had a replacement ready. How that affects Giroud, I simply don't know. It seems crazy to me that he would go for as little as 15 or 20 million pounds. I rate him very highly as an orthodox, really powerful striker. And it's a bit of a head scratcher, I must say.
And John, Chris, I know you want to come in because I'm sure you've got plenty more informed questions on Aubameyang than me. I'm just hosting this, so fire away.
Rafi, first I just want to say, and I'm sure Chris will echo this and many of our listeners, I was so disappointed when BT Sport took the Sunday show away with you and Jimbo and Julian and James as well.
Thank you very much.
It was a really good show. The one thing I wanted to ask about Aubameyang, with him coming in, obviously, you've already said it is a bit strange, and I agree. I don't think it's the area of the pitch that Arsenal needed to look at. Is he going to demand to play through the middle? Because there's a lot of Arsenal fans thinking, oh, well, he'll play wide left and Lacazette through the middle and maybe Mesut on the other side. And I don't really see them playing together at all, to be honest. So is that going to be kind of a stipulation for him that he is the starting striker coming in?
Well, I don't think it'll be formally a stipulation or any, explicit agreement. But I'm very confident in saying that he comes here to play as a number nine. I don't think he wants to be a winger anymore. I don't think he can be a winger anymore, because part of the reason why it didn't work out for Dortmund in that position was that he just didn't do enough going back in a Jurgen Klopp team. Of course, you can say, you know, Arsenal, we're used to wingers not tracking back. That's fine. But seriously, I don't see how that is going to be even remotely an option. You might put up with it for a couple of games. But frankly, you wouldn't get the best out of him, and it might rub him the wrong way.
Yeah, no, I understand that. We've seen, obviously, Mkhitaryan come in as part of the Sanchez deal for Manchester United. Can you just talk a little bit about the partnership that him and Aubameyang had at Dortmund and how much that might, hopefully, if as long as the Aubameyang deal obviously goes through, help him transition in the Premier League?
Yeah, I think the word partnership has been mentioned a little bit too much, and maybe it's been overplayed a little bit. But undoubtedly, in Thomas Tuchel's first season, 15-16, when you remember when they played against Spurs and then got knocked out by Liverpool in Europa League, Dortmund were one of the best teams in Europe. They played some unbelievable stuff up front. and those two guys were very, very influential. But there was also Royce, there was also Kagawa, who was coming back to his best. There were one or two fringe players coming through. So, yes, they have a great understanding. Yes, they played well together, but it wasn't sort of a two-man team at the time, and there was a lot of movement around them, and they worked beautifully together. It's an interesting one. I think the idea of playing Mkhitaryan and Ozil together is mouth-watering. At the same time, you wonder, you know, will Arsenal always have been top-heavy a little bit, but become even more top-heavy as a result? The one question mark with Mkhitaryan is his confidence, because he's an unbelievable player when things go for him, when he enjoys the confidence of the manager. Under Jurgen Klopp, it did not work out for him, but Thomas Tuchel completely changed things around. He was unbelievable, had all these offers from all over the world, and of course that's the reason why he ended up at Man United. Since then, we haven't really seen him reproduce the same kind of form. And I'm very interested if Wenger can coach that out of him and give him enough backing to get him back to where he can be. It's an interesting, very interesting move. But again, I'm not exactly sure where he fits into the puzzle piece.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I don't know, Chris and a couple of the other guys from the pod are all kind of, why are we not buying maybe a central midfielder or a centre-back, or maybe looking at future goalkeepers rather than forwards? But we'll see how it goes. Just staying with Mkhitaryan, and I guess it also kind of counts for Aubameyang as well, it hasn't really worked out for him at Man United. As you say, he's a confidence player. Is it just down to the management style of who's backing him? I mean, do you back his ability in the Premier League? Because Shinji Kagawa is another player who came over from Dortmund who it didn't work out for either. And there is obviously the worry that, okay, we got rid of Alexis Sanchez and we were in a situation that we really didn't have much of a choice, but have we ended up with a player who can't perform in this league? Is it a little bit too much for him?
Yeah, I don't believe that the league is the issue here. I mean, as I said just a while ago, Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang absolutely destroyed Spurs and Liverpool in that Europa League. I don't see why they shouldn't be beating most of the other sides. The issue, I think, more is the playing style with Mkhitaryan, in addition to the confidence issue. I think with Mourinho and the kind of positions he had to take up, in my view, he was so deep and so far away from the real places to influence the game that it was very, very difficult. You want Mkhitaryan very close to the box. You want him basically in Mesut Ozil's position, always available, always between the lines, and playing the final pass or perhaps running onto it. If you put him next to the holding midfielder, 80 meters away from opposition goal, he will struggle. Of course, that's not a problem for Arsenal. They don't play that deep. I think he will fit in to the Arsenal way of playing much better than he did at United. Yeah. And I don't think the Premier League itself is the issue here. I think he's got what it takes to be a superb player once more.
Yeah, I hope so as well. Chris, I know you've got a few more questions you wanted to fire Rafi's way.
Yes, yeah. Also, from my own personal standpoint, Rafi, thanks for coming on again. Without blowing too much smoke, you're one of the best around, so a pleasure to have you on. I just wanted to ask you, sort of away from Aubameyang slightly, although I will start with him and lead on to him. When he was, I'm quite a close follower of French football, and you may mention to his time at St Etienne. My one concern as a fan, in terms of our playing style, is getting the best out of Lacazette has clearly not worked thus far. Do you share my concerns that although Aubameyang's goal record is superb, he's a striker that relies on service a great deal? Is that a little bit of a worry for you, looking at how Arsenal's set up? Do you, even though Meza is behind him and Mkhitaryan, if we're trying to fudge our formation, is that a concern that we might not play to his strengths?
No, I don't think so. I think he fits into Arsenal's way of playing, especially when it comes to counter-attacks, when it comes to creating spaces by being in midfield, when the opposition have the ball. His pressing game is pretty good as well, because he's been schooled that way at Dortmund. But you're right. I mean, he's not going to pick up the ball 30 meters from goal and start dribbling and then smashing it in from the edge of the box. That's not his game. So yes, like almost every striker, he is reliant on service, perhaps more so than somebody like Harry Kane, shall we say, you know, who does make things happen a bit more, I would say. But he still is an absolute elite striker and somebody that you want on the end of your attacks, because he will score a lot of goals. I'm not sure I'm ready to write off Lacazette yet, by the way. I mean, I don't know how this is going to affect him. Basically, Arsene Wenger's telling him, you will play now in the Europa League. Good luck to you. But I like Lacazette. And I wonder if, you know, he's been kind of scapegoated a little bit. And people look at him and he looks a little bit tired and a little bit sort of stale at the moment. But he's played a lot of games. Giroud has been injured, as we know. Sanchez has not played through the middle much this year. So I don't know if we're maybe doing him a little bit of a disservice.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. As the guys will tell you, I've been Lacazette's biggest fan before he came over to Arsenal. So I hope he gets a chance. In regards to Mesut Ozil, as you mentioned, what's your sort of take on his future? Because there's a bit of a mixture in the Arsenal fan base. Some people lean towards he hasn't really had any big offers, so he'll stay because nobody's interested, which I'm pretty sure you would say is not the case. I'm sure plenty of teams will be keen. What do you know of interest from elsewhere? And do you get the impression that he's a player that would actually quite like to stay at Arsenal, but as with every player or a player of his size, he needs that ambition fulfilled and the confirmation that we're going to make something of what he's got to play with?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, of course, you know, who's been calling his agent up and how serious this is. This is all happening behind Arsenal's back, of course. So it's very difficult to gauge the real interest unless somebody actually makes an offer, as has happened with Sanchez in January, but also, of course, before in the summer. It's hard to know just how firm or how big the market for him is. Of course, tomorrow, if you wanted to, he could go to Turkey. He could probably go to many, many clubs in Italy. But whether he could go to one of the two big Spanish sides, having already played at Real Madrid, having seen Barcelona pay a lot of money for Dembele and Coutinho, I'm not sure. And then that leaves the Premier League. I don't know. What I do know is that his main goal, his target, is really to stay at Arsenal. I think he's very, very settled. He loves it. I think he loves the club. He loves the fact that he's a really important player, that he kind of, you know, is the maybe not the face, but certainly the heart and the brain of the team at many times. And I think he's very reluctant to give all that up. But of course, he's very aware of his value in the transfer market and as far as the wages are concerned. And I believe that both him and Arsenal, in the end, believe that, you know, staying is makes so much sense for both sides. It'd be crazy to let him go. If you can renew with a player like this, of course, you'll have to pay a little bit more, but he's still a player that you already own. If you go out and now try to find the next Mesut Ozil in today's market, it's going to cost you 70-80 million pounds. So I would be very, very surprised if they don't find some kind of agreement.
Yeah, because that's something people forget. You have to replace, even if you're going to let go of. Sort of moving slightly away from the player's perspective, in Germany, what is the general, if there indeed is an opinion, of the situation at Arsenal, and in particular Arsene Wenger at the moment? We, as you probably be well aware, the fan base is very divided, especially after results like tonight, in terms of the manager and his position. Is he still looked upon in Germany as one of the greatest managers around and the sort of manager that everyone would love to have? Or is there a growing sense that he is kind of from the past generation now and it's time to move forward?
I mean, it's very, very hard for me to answer this because I, of course, live in London and any German view is heavily influenced by the stuff I write for a German audience. Yeah. I mean, if you believe me, then I think he is very much yesterday's man, I'm afraid to say. And this is not something that started over the last few years or so. I think this goes back far, far longer, but has now come to a head because of the improvement from other teams. You know, I think they, Arsenal, were able to sort of get away with that kind of man management way of coaching because they still had a lot of money relative to most clubs, and you didn't see the improvement at places like Liverpool or Spurs in recent years. So it's not a surprise. And I think it just shows you that football doesn't wait for people. And I think it's a bit of a shame that Wenger seems to have missed the best moment to call it a day. And now, whenever he goes, I don't think he'll go with the same kind of stature and the same kind of legacy that he could have had if he'd walked out a bit earlier. And that is, as a neutral, I think, the sad conclusion to the story.
Yeah, definitely does feel that way. One other final one from me, if we've got time. I want to ask you about two other players, but just the final one on the coaching side. Per Mertesacker is obviously going to be moving across to the coaching side of things. This might be a really obvious answer or a really obvious question, but do you think he's going to be a good influence in and around Arsenal, his experience, his knowledge, particularly given the fact he's going to be working with the younger players? Do you think that's going to be a really good fit moving forwards if he's allowed to coach?
Well, first of all, I have to declare an interest because I'm working on his autobiography at the moment. So I'm probably not best placed to give you an objective answer. And says that he's not going to be involved in any coaching. That's not his role. His role is really to head up the academy and to completely reform the way that the whole youth system is set up and down the line hire the right coaches and change things. But he won't be coaching himself. That's not his job. I'm sure, knowing him a little bit and now even more with the work for the book, that his story and his attitude and his professionalism is really going to be able to act as a role model and help young players. But it is a big challenge because you have this strange situation that here at 16, 17, people sign big contracts and feel they've got it made, and then they kind of disappear 3 years later. You never hear from them again. And I think Arsenal and Mertesacker will try to break that cycle and make it more sustainable. But it's going to be very hard.
Yeah, it's interesting that, as you say, it's really good to know that things are going to be going on. And we'll, of course, look out for that book. And goes without saying, I'm sure we'll be able to plug that when it comes out. John, have you got anything else you want to add?
Yeah, just a couple of quick ones, if we've still got time. The appointment of Sven Mislintat was met with quite some excitement at Arsenal. Obviously, we've seen the players that Dortmund have got over the years and how exciting they are, and then they've gone on to sell them for big money. And I think fans have started to realise that, you know, we're not going to be able to compete with, say, Man City, PSG, those kind of clubs, but we can certainly shop, you know, just the tier below and get the young up-and-coming talents, and maybe we can keep hold of a few and might have to sell some others. Is he as good as everyone says? Is it all more just overhyped? You know, Arsenal's kind of taken a bit of a German transformation, actually, at the moment. As Chris said, they're Per taking over at the academy. We've obviously got the German influence already with the playing staff and players coming in from the Bundesliga. So from your point of view, I'm sure you're very pro-German for everything and the way they've done things. But is Sven as good as they say?
Well, this is not an easy question to answer, because it's always a collaborative effort. He signed players along with sporting director Michael Zorc and with the CEO of Dortmund, Hans-Joachim Watzke, and of course with the coaches. And there have been disagreements at times. He, I can tell you, for example, always felt that Aubameyang was a centre forward, and Jurgen Klopp disagreed with him. And that was one of the reasons why in Klopp's last season, things fell apart a little bit, because you had that background sort of disagreement. But there's no doubt that he's got a good eye for players. There's no doubt that he is highly rated also in Germany, because Bayern Munich, I think, had a look at him, asked him if he was perhaps able to come over at some point. And the one thing I'm not sure about is how that always translates. What I mean by that is he was perfect at Dortmund because he knew what kind of player would work at the manager that Dortmund had at any time in the Dortmund dressing room, in a Dortmund environment. And now you have to change that and think about players that will work at Arsenal under what manager, question mark, I'm not sure. So, you know, you might sign a lot of good players, but whether they will have the same impact or coach the same way and have the same success, I think that still remains one of those mysteries of football. I mean, why does Kagawa not work outside Dortmund? Why does Nurishahin go to Madrid and then comes back a year later? All these questions that are very, very difficult to answer. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm sure that if he can only find one Lewandowski or one Kagawa in the second division, basically he's paid for his own wages for a few years. So I guess for Arsenal, it's just playing in the numbers game here. He just needs to get one or two players right, and that's it. But I don't know how much of an impact or influence he really have without, or maybe with, again, I don't know, a Michael Zorc type figure above him, who is really making the long-term strategy plans, who's making the decisions, who would have, as an aside, I don't think ever let something like what happened to Arsenal this summer happen, that you'd best two players out of contract and nobody really knows what's going on. This is the sort of thing that a sporting director is paid for. Without a guy like him, above Mislintat, I just don't know how big his role would be. It's very difficult for me to gauge from a distance, even though I'm very close to the Emirates from here, but still too far to have to have much of an insight.
Yeah. Just two more very quick questions, then I'm sure we'll let you go. One is on Granit Xhaka. I follow Gladbach in the Bundesliga, and I was excited, although a little bit anxious, about him joining Arsenal. I had lots of people ask me about him and what kind of player, and I think everyone thought they were getting this defensive mid that we've been mysteriously missing for about 10 years. I tried to explain he wasn't that. Can you go into what you think his sort of best position is and what kind of setup around him? Because I tried to explain to people that when he was Gladbach, he had people like Christoph Kramer running around, basically doing the running for him, and he kind of just sat back and would ping balls around. But I don't think he's having the best of times at Arsenal at the moment. He looks like he's lacking any kind of direction. So I don't know. Maybe it's the manager, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think he looks lost in midfield at the moment. I think at Gladbach, he had very defined roles. They weren't always the same. I mean, he would play in a variety of positions, sometimes further up, sometimes further back, even as a centre-back at times when they had a few injuries. But the difference was that he was coached within an inch of his life. So I always say that, you know, Lucien Favre, his coach at the time, he would stop training and say, Granit, 10 centimetres to the left, please. And everyone would stop, and then Granit would shuffle over 10 centimetres, and then things would continue. What I want to say is by that is that he grew up and is used to really, really detailed directions. And I think if there's one thing we do know now, which has, I think, kind of slipped out over the last years, is that Arsene Wenger gives very, very little direction to his players. Now, some players are so good and instinctively do the right thing all the time, they don't need it. They thrive on that freedom and they just do the right things and nobody notices it, that they're not getting any directions. But Granit Xhaka is not that type of player. He doesn't know where he's going. I don't think he's getting any real input. Wenger is supporting him, backing him, thinking he can work it out himself, like many players have done, and many have not, over the last few years. And he looks a shadow of the player that we saw in Germany. Now, people will say, you know, the step up from Gladbach to Arsenal was too steep or whatever. I don't think that's the reason. I think it's really down to him being a really bad fit at that kind of, very player-centric model that we have at Arsenal. He just doesn't, I think, thrive on that freedom. He would much prefer to have much more detailed responsibilities.
Yeah, I feel a bit sorry for him sometimes when I'm watching him. And I understand Arsene likes to do his play players through games until they get better. But I think he also kind of needs a rest. He looks exhausted. I don't think he's missed a game, to be honest, this season, really. The last question is a little bit of a tease for our listeners and for Arsenal fans. There's been some hints from certain publications, maybe not the most reliable, but apparently Sven Mislintat has told Arsene, or at least the board, maybe Ivan Gazidis, I don't know, that the number one target for the summer should be a certain Julian Weigl from Borussia Dortmund. Can you fill everyone in on Julian Weigl, how exciting a player he is? And yeah, I suppose it's too much to ask whether you think we could actually get him. I won't put that question to you.
No, you can ask me. I mean, the latest gossip in Germany is that Pep is after him.
And oh, dear.
That's a story that's been doing the rounds for a while, because when he was coming through, Pep was still in Germany and Weigl was absolutely outstanding. Again, in that year that they all had in 15-16, where they just looked so brilliant as a collective. Now, Weigl, unfortunately, after suffering a bad ankle injury, has not quite been the same player, struggling to get anywhere near the sort of form that we saw from him at the moment. Has been a little bit lost this season at Dortmund. Also, change of managers has not done much for him and his confidence. So I don't know how much Arsenal want to push this, but he looks like a player who needs to regain his footing and his confidence. It'd be very interesting, because this is a player who's a sort of a deep-lying playmaker, a little bit in the Michael Carrick mold, a little bit in the Pirlo mold, sort of in the later Pirlo, in a sense that, you know, he just plays a million passes every game. Can he do that as a holding midfielder without anyone behind him? I am not sure. So again, you know, putting him now as Arsenal's number six tomorrow, and let's say putting Wilshere next to him, I'd be very doubtful that could work. So it's an interesting one. It's a very interesting one. I love him as a player, but I'm not sure he is really the answer for Arsenal's problems right now in centre midfield.
Yeah, very much. Chris, have you got any other questions or...?
There's only one final one from me, Rafi, and it was just in relation to, it's topical at the moment, slightly off topic, but VAR, V-A-R, whatever you choose to term it. John sort of follows Serie A for another podcast I'm part of, and say I've done Ligue 1, which obviously it's not come across to yet. Where it appears to be sort of in full use, whether for good or bad, is, of course, in the Bundesliga. What's the general feeling? Because Bundesliga fans are known to be, you know, some of the best crowds in European football, and the spectacle is worth the value for money you pay, etc. Has it gone down well, or has it been really mixed in terms of how it's done, and with all the German efficiency to use the obvious stereotype?
Yeah, I think it hasn't been nearly efficient enough. There's been real glitches, some of them technical, some of them in the way it's been implemented, human error coming into it. So, for example, the video assistant referee looking at it and then getting it plainly wrong. I mean, that's hugely annoying. It can happen, but really shouldn't. The fact that the offside lines are still not calibrated, one of the easiest things in theory, because it's objective to test, still not ready after all these months. So that's a big disappointment. And maybe the sense that, yes, you have more justice, and yes, you have fewer bad decisions, but is it a price worth paying? That stop and start nature, the sense that, you know, you score a goal, but you're not sure, is it a goal, is it not a goal, you know, what's happening? The fact that TV viewers, and of course, even those in the stadiums, half of the time don't really know what's going on. So it's been, and I say this as broadly as a supporter and as a fan of the idea, it's been not as successful, I think, as everyone had hoped for or even expected. So right now, I'd say there'd be probably a small majority in saying, you know what, it's been fun, but the way it is right now, thanks, we'll leave it again. So I think they really need to change the parameters of the employment, get things right, get the technical glitches out of the system, and then maybe we have a much better, more functioning VAR. At the moment, it just leaves a little bit too much to be desired.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. There's still things to be ironed out. Yeah, that's it for me, Rafi. I really appreciate that, and I will pass you back to Kimley.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time, Rafi. It's been a pleasure to listen to you talk about German football and Arsenal and what we have in store for the future. So thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Rafi.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. I should also say a big thank you to John and Chris, who have also been on the show tonight. It's been short but sweet, but we will be back tomorrow for a main podcast with, who's on tomorrow? Is it Lee Judges, Jeff, and I think you, John, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm back on tomorrow, yeah.
Marvellous.
I was going to do this and the radio show at the same time. It should be everywhere.
You could have. We should say thanks to John for pushing the buttons. He does it far better than Danny. I think we can both agree, Kim. Far less stress.
He
pronounces everything.
He doesn't,
you know,
irk me like what Danny does. No.
And we should tell the listeners as well, Kim. I don't think we're planning to do any transfer pod this year because we've done this pod as a bonus. And is that what's happening now? It's just the three pods. You never know, but.
If something major happens on deadline day, then you might hear from us again. As it goes, I don't think I'm going to be back until 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening. If there's going to be certainly nothing in the daytime, but we'll keep you all posted as to if we do or not.
Good times. And we'll be back. What's the next game? I don't even know. And who are we playing? When we're
still trying to forget about the fucking last one. It ended 40 minutes ago.
Good to have Rafi on though. That was good. Good fun. And I know he's gone now, but I think John and I both would say that was a pleasure to speak to a man of so much knowledge.
Little bit man crush then.
Only Laurent's to go, and we've got the full set.
I've got to get Horncastle as well.
Oh yeah, true. Yeah, yeah.
We need to get someone working on those. But we are planning to do a few little interviews like that with journalists, and we'll sprinkle them about left, right, and centre. So there's more than enough coming up from us.
Respectable journalists, not people like Collings. I mean, you know,
or we've got Arsenal Nexus.
Don't get me started. Don't start calling people out, Kim. It goes wrong when you start doing that.
You know, our next game? It's the return of the Theo.
Oh, yes, Everton on Saturday evening, isn't it? Of course.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Yes.
That could go spectacularly wrong. Theo Walcott hat-trick if you're judging on tonight's result.
Interesting. Do you want a piece of inside info on how we play tonight from a non-opposition fan?
Yeah,
or
go on.
Non-Arsenal fan. So a certain person who will remain nameless for potential legal reasons is well associated with some of the staff at Swansea, and it's not Jason. She was at the game tonight, sat behind Arsene Wenger, and I'll just read this word for word from my WhatsApp here. What the fuck happened? You were absolute fucking dog shit, and you know I quite like Arsenal. So there you go. That's coming straight from somebody who doesn't really care about either side particularly. So there you go.
A great way to end the podcast, to be honest.
Yeah, there you go.
See, and that was me. I was just going to carry on chucking some out there. I don't know, listening back to this, but it seemed like Rafi was a bit downbeat on Aubameyang.
I think he was more questioning why we're signing a striker when there's other areas of the team that clearly need work.
Yeah.
I think we're all agreed, like, we're all happy if we get Aubameyang. You know, I mean, it looks like it is done, basically, but you can never be 100% until it's over the line. But I think everyone was like, maybe there's a centre mid we need, maybe a new defender, maybe a goalkeeper, you know, things like that.
And the reason we asked that question, we were talking pre-pod to let listeners in, a glimpse behind the curtain. The reason I asked him about the question about service is that a lot of our fans who, without wishing to sound disrespectful, but being disrespectful anyway, who only watch YouTube clips or play Football Manager or FIFA, it's all very well signing a nice, shiny new striker. Well, we kind of did that in the summer and we're not feeding the one we've got. So as Rafi said, you know, clearly in that pod, if you're looking for an Henry style goal against Liverpool where he picks up the ball and runs, or the Spurs goal, that's not going to happen. So, you know, it's all very well us packing our team with forwards and attacking, you know, centre midfielder and centre attackers. If we're not going to feed them and we're not going to play the style that suits them, you know, we could stick Messi in this team. It really wouldn't make a difference. So, and he's going to have to bed in as well. You know, it will. He might hit the ground running like a Reyes, but then he might have an adjustment period. So yeah, and as Rafi said, don't write Lacazette off just yet. It's a bit early for all that.
Hopefully. Right, it's interesting he's how highly he rates Giroud as well. I'm not sure I understand selling him. I do, no. Because his contract's coming to an end soon ish. Is it? I don't know if it's next year, I think.
Yeah, 18 months, isn't it? Yeah,
something like that. But the point you made about the Europa League, we do only have Lacazette now, basically, to play if Giroud does go to Chelsea. He is a different option to those two strikers, a very different option. And the fact is, we are strengthening a rival. I understand we've ended up having to do it because the Aubameyang deal might fall through. Mm. But, I mean, the fee seems low, and I don't know. I do wonder sometimes, can clubs not say, you know, like Dortmund obviously needed a replacement to Aubameyang. Could, like, Arsenal have not been working on finding them another striker that didn't involve Chelsea? You know, things like that sometimes.
And he's not a player that would suit Dortmund. So why on earth did we even put him on the table? Why didn't we just go in and try and, but, you know, why didn't we get this? We always say this. Why didn't we get this deal done a week ago when we started talking to Dortmund? And let's not forget, we've agreed personal terms with this player a week ago.
Yeah.
And we've been fanny-arsing around with his car being pitched and everything. You know, if we'd have got this deal done last week, Dortmund would have had 7 to 10 days to find their striker. Whereas now they're scrabbling around the market, as Chelsea is scrabbling around the market, as we're scrabbling around the market. When we've had, surely the player's agreement with the player is the hardest part of a deal. Once a player's got the agreement and wants to sign for you, you turn up at the club and you say, look, this player wants out. So we need to get this deal done. Otherwise, you've got a player who doesn't want to be here, Alexis Sanchez. Do you know what I mean? It's like, surely we did the hard bit, but as usual, us being us, we've dragged our heels. And now here we are. What is it, tomorrow, the deadline?
Tomorrow. And I think in Germany, the deadline is 5 p.m.
So we've basically got the day. I mean, it seems like it's done. I think the shirt's being printed and all sorts now. So he's obviously had his medical and everything today. Barring anything dramatic, I think it will get done. But it's the Giroud one, you know, people laughed on the radio show. And I think we were on the pods at some point, Gim, when I said that he's the best striker in Europe at what he does. And the biggest problem is a lot of our fans, again, you know, some that maybe aren't as what I would call football educated, just see him for what he is. Oh, well, he's not quick. He's not got, you know, flash boots or, you know, he's not a sort of a low centre gravity, twisty, turny striker. Therefore, oh, he's just shit. Well,
he's not a get-you-off-your-seat kind of striker.
Exactly.
You watch Alexis play and he gets you off your seat and you get excited. You watch Giroud, you do nice little one-twos and stuff. But it's not the same kind of style.
He was the most complete number nine in old terms that we've had since Alan Smith. And how long ago is that?
Yeah.
You know, and that's he will strengthen Chelsea massively. And
I'll be interested to see, because I imagine that Conte will play, if the deal goes through, Conte will play him with Morata.
Yep. Two up
he
front.
He essentially wanted Llorente, didn't he?
Yeah.
Again, yeah.
Which I'd still be, I still, from a selfish point of view, would love to see Giroud at, I don't know, somewhere like West Ham, where he's not a threat to us, but he'll actually play the games he deserves. He's still France's number one. He can go there with our blessing. Whereas if he goes to Chelsea, and if he doesn't play, that'll be upsetting. And if he does play and makes them better, that'll be upsetting even more. And I don't blame him at all, by the way. I won't be somebody that would boo him. You know, he's stuck by us when a lot of people turn their backs. He signed a new deal last summer. He signed a new deal knowing Lacazette was coming in as well. You know, he's done absolutely nothing wrong. And he's never, ever got the credit he deserved. So, you know, good luck to him. It's just a shame he's going to one of that odious lot, potentially.
It is. But it goes to show you what a good servant to the club it is, that he is actually moving on to let somebody else come in, because he must know the full effects of the deal. So, I mean, talking about tonight's game, the one thing that worried me is if you're going to stick Lacazette up top on his own in the Europa League, I think he's going to struggle against the bigger teams.
Just depends who we draw, doesn't it? That's the thing. I mean, I don't want to tempt fate, but if we, I mean, you'd like to think without being arrogant English team, we should have enough to beat Östersunds. Yeah. And you'd think, I mean, I think John would probably, you'd probably both agree with me actually, Kim, as well. I think when you look at teams like, if we have to go to Atletico Madrid and break them down, I worry. If we have to go to the San Paolo, to Napoli and break them down they've while they're attacking us.
I think they've got the second best defence in Syria at the moment. They're only just bested by, I think it's Juve have overtaken them again now. But they were the top defence and the best attacking team at the same time in the league. It's ridiculous.
They have the power to outscore us, don't they? And, you know, even a side like Lyon, I think on our day we would see off Lyon. But and then you've got Dortmund
I think this is the one thing with Arsenal at the moment. If we're playing our best,
we'll see off anyone.
We'll beat anyone. But it's just not consistent enough at the moment. But, I don't know. You remember when Ozil came into the club? I think we weren't as unstructured as a team as we are at the moment, but it was a huge lift.
We got
and everyone
lift.
Started playing better, didn't they? So Aubameyang, if you walk through the door, all the players know him, they know what he can do. He's exciting. It might push Lacazette that little bit harder that he goes, oh, okay, I'm going to be dropped to Europa League now. I've got to work even harder to get my games in the league where I really want to perform. So hopefully it'll be that little bit of boost. And there's still rumours that maybe there's another signing.
Well, I was just gonna say, I don't know if Kim, if you wanted to round off the show tonight with this question, but do you think anybody else, is that the end of the deals? Because Johnny Evans' hamstring has gone bang, so that pretty much means we're guaranteed to sign him. So, is that it? Do you think like David Luiz maybe comes either way from Chelsea for that Giroud deal, or do you think that we'll panic after tonight and go, oh shit, actually we're not very good again?
I think it's possible for Luiz to come the other way. The only thing I could be critical of us in the transfer window is the fact that we were all so hyped up about Mkhitaryan. Let's not forget, until Aubameyang signed, we still haven't spent a penny this window. And we're all happy. So, tomorrow could change a lot of things. I hope we're busy. The people that I speak to say that we will be busy, but I mean, how many times have we been told that before?
Yeah, but you can't believe Dial Square, Kim. I've told you this before.
I had Dean on the phone. He was telling me all of his info, insider info, and he gave me a nay at the end.
My best mate Wayne Gooney said it is definitely on. So and Mr. Hot Chicken Winks, I mean, he's guaranteed. The Colonel says yes, so it's on.
You must love that, though, having someone like Dean on Twitter to take the heat away from you if you get it wrong.
I get a lot wrong, but the difference is, unlike certain ITKs, I'll defend myself here, I only share what I hear. Doesn't mean it's actually going to happen. You get these people that come on and go, yep, definitely happening, and then it doesn't happen, and they mysteriously disappear. I'll always defend myself. Even
when,
if I'm wrong.
When Chris isn't 100%, he just posts a picture of a player and just says the words, I wonder, just to tease.
Me and Dom love that. We tried that social experiment a few years back. It's great fun.
I agree with Gim. I think if any other deal was to happen, it's most likely, I know it's gone a bit quiet now, but David Luiz loan. There was a lot of talk about that, wasn't there, early in the window?
Been ongoing throughout. I think we've been in touch the whole way through, and it wouldn't.
I know some people are a bit iffy about it, but I think it's a good enough. It's another body. Koscielny can't play every week. He can play in defensive mid as well. We're sort of floating. We did it tonight. We changed between back four and back three again with Elneny coming in and out of that position. So I don't think it's the worst thing till the end of the season.
I do worry, just in that I've seen enough of David Luiz across Paris and Chelsea to say I still have concerns. But if you're going to bring him in, I think you have to play him in midfield. You can't play him at the back, because we're bad enough as it is without dropping in another one who, even on his best days, David Luiz has got a rick in him. I think we've got enough of those as it is. So, put him in front of the back four and let him do the Xhaka role by all means, but not in a back four. No thanks.
I happen to think it would be a very good move. I posted that on Twitter last night.
Be entertained.
It would be. I mean, he's won a Champions League, which is more than you can say for half of them there at the moment, isn't it? So, you know, I think that tomorrow has the possibility to be exciting, if not only for Aubameyang, but I certainly myself would be happy if we got Luiz in. Apart from that, is there anything else that we should be mentioning on here?
Danny's fat. We should always mention that. I think, pray for Colin's liver. I think that's always needs to be mentioned.
Pray for Steve's heart after the Swansea game tonight.
I haven't been watching or listening. I got the score at the end. I've got to go through these fucking 174 Carpenters in the bloody group now.
Oh yeah, yeah. Listen, just don't read anything. Just listen to Steve's voice messages in order. At one point, I think his head actually explodes. It's amazing. I was genuinely worried. I was talking to Danny earlier. I was like, do we know anyone else over in Poland? We can get someone to go check on him.
Poor bugger.
Yeah, he was not a happy man. I don't blame him. I've got past the point of being upset now. I just laugh.
Between Swansea and Brexit, he's popped.
God. I think if there's ever I don't know if you want to end with this, Gim, feel free. It's a bit of a negative to end on such a fun show with Rafi, but I noticed the score and I just tweeted. I said, honestly, not sure I care anymore. Sad times, but there's more to life. Night night, enjoy fighting over who's to blame. That's generally how I feel about things at the moment.
Do you know I blame?
Hang on, there's got to be a punchline here. No, go on.
Mo Hader.
He's just...
I'm not expanding on that. I'm just saying, that's who I blame, the end. So that was a Bergkamp Wonderland podcast. Thanks. Thank you so much for listening. And keep it Arsenal. Good night.
And here's some more shenanigans after the podcast ended.
Keep it Arsenal. Good night.
Just can't help yourself, can you?
I'm crossing them off. I got a calendar. I'm crossing them off. I think we're going to go for troops on Thursday.
That's why I chucked those in.
I can imagine you with a dartboard, just throwing one out and going, "Oh, which one off AFTV do I hit this week?"
Yeah, Chris with his transfers.
it's the same one that it's the same dartboard Darren Berry uses when he just sort of thinks, "Right, I'm bored. Who can I?"
Yeah.
Did you see that tweet?
He did some crackers today.
Oh, that was brilliant.
Some great ones today.
Yeah, Arsenal Twitter can find Aubameyang's plane, but they can't find Claude hiding under Mems' bed for Robbie's bed for 6 months.
I like the one about, did you see how many people were following the plane? What was it, 32,000?
My mate messaged me this at work and said, have you seen this? And I thought he was going on holiday. I was like, what?
I had no idea what was going on.
No.
So busy, and then I checked in the groups, and they're like, "Oh my god, the whole of Arsenal Twitter is tracking a plane."
Yeah.
Did you not think that I tweeted at the time? We don't deserve anything nice when we do shit like that, do we? We just don't deserve anything. Like, fucking lump of coal should rock up tomorrow in an Arsenal shirt.
Yeah.
And just let that be that.
The best response though was they should have asked Arsenal fans to find Malaysia. What was it? MH370.
Oh yeah.
Jesus Christ.
There's always one. Like there's always that person that goes, you've really offended me, delete that now.
Yeah, although I tell you, every time David Orne this is my favorite thing in the world, because the replies to Orne at the moment are unbelievable. Some of the photoshops are so good. My personal favorite is definitely the one where he's Neo from the Matrix stopping all the John Crossheads.
That is quite
supposed
good.
To be the bullets.
Weirdly, as I was watching the Matrix Reloaded last night, which is a bit strange, I saw that picture. I was like, this is weird. Well,
I like the one where they've made Ornstein into Keown and fucking John Cross into Van Nistelrooy.
Oh, so good.
Do you know what?
It was nice to be reassured I was correct on Xhaka and the coaching thing.
Oh, yeah, you were bang on, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, he must just not be... Because honestly, tonight, when Kluka scored that first goal, he just did nothing.
Yeah.
He just stood there and just watched him walk past. It's unbelievable.
It's nice to have it ratified by somebody who knows exactly what they're talking about, doesn't it? Yeah. I felt the same when he said about Lacazette. I was like, yeah, thank you. Somebody who understands the game can see that we're not giving him what he actually needs, and we're putting too many eggs in one basket almost, which is what we'll do with the
how ridiculous the players, how good they were, what we used to have. Mm. that they could just do everything themselves on the pitch.
Which, you know, as much as I love Arsene, you do have to look back at that Invincible side now and go, how much of that was that wonderful team that, albeit he created.
Made them believe they could do it. And
And how much of it was, you know, the David Dean influence to get those players, and how much of it was actually coached. It does make you wonder, doesn't it?
Can't believe I went with a fucking... I thought, yeah, I'll be positive tonight. I'll put in a decent prediction. I'll put us down to win. 3-1.
Went wrong.
And it went 3-1 to Swansea. I was going to put that before as well. I was like, no, I'll be positive. I'm going to change the scoreline. I'll put it to Arsenal. Send it off to Danny. Fucking lose. That our away form is so bad.
It's that blue shirt, I reckon.
I hate that kit.
It looked better with darker shorts, but it's still an awful kit, isn't it?
Oh, I do not like that at all. And we got to wear that at home for the Ostersund game.
Yeah.
I like the black one, like the black with the pink. At first I was like, oh, it was a bit like, that's not Arsenal wearing a black kit, but actually it looks really smart, but that blue thing's disgusting.
Yeah, I agree. Gib, definitely keep an eye on that book Ras writing, because that would be an awesome...
Yeah, I was just going to say, that might be a good way to get Per on the show if he's got a book to promote. And Raffy obviously knows us, and we always treat him with respect, and we don't swear. And
yeah, maybe it'd be good if you could get both on at the same time.
I was
going to
say, the two together would be awesome. And I didn't realise he wasn't going to be coaching. I knew he was going to cover the whole setup, but I didn't realise he wasn't actually going to coach. That's interesting.
I thought he was going to be a coach as well.
Yeah, no, I thought he was coaching too. So that's news to me tonight.
That'll give some insight. But yeah, that was... that's good. That'll be a good book. That'll be a good read as well, given his experience as well. So,
I read his Das reboot one. That was really good about the German football. I haven't read the Klopp one, but I'm going to get it.
I wanted to know, when obviously Raffy is a massive Bayern fan, why he's done these Dortmund books.
Yeah,
it amazes me. It's like if someone said, "Oh, Matt, you're good. Go and fucking write a podcast that's dedicated to Jerry Francis." No, you're right.
I think it's just because he's over here in England, and obviously there's such a big affection for Jurgen Klopp, even from non-Liverpool fans. Like, fans of other clubs that absolutely love him, don't they?
Yeah.
As well. And it's like you said, Chris, you met him, didn't you, when he was it at Plymouth?
Yes.
He said he's a really nice guy. Like, he's hard not to like.
Yeah, he's a genuine, I mean, I get annoyed with people who go, "Oh, so that's passion, that's what we need."
Yeah.
It's like, I still question his tactical methods and whatnot, but no, as a bloke, he was you know, life and soul of a room. That's without any shadow of a doubt. He's charismatic,
and he hugs his players. So let's not forget that he must automatically be better than Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, naturally. Yeah, exactly. Fan blood.
Yeah.
Oh well. Well, I'm going to go to bed and pretend today didn't happen. I think that's the way forwards in life.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do something very similar.
I'm going to watch the radio show so I can listen to Jason getting angry and telling Ellis off.
Oh, God, I'm not sure. I love Jace to bits, but I'm not sure I can stomach that tonight.
I might get abusive in the chat box once we finish this.
I guarantee that Ellis has been winding Jace up, because he's been doing it all week, just sending messages and talking about Norwich and stuff.
He's been trying to wind me up, but I've not been biting. I've just sat there and watched it all go by.
Oh, the stat padding from Lacazette.
Yeah, Chris, I watched a film about your life this weekend, a couple of days back.
Sex, Lies of the Potato Men, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Nothing pirate or potato-based.
Something ITK related.
No, it was released in this country on the 24th of January. It's called Downsizing.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Such a cunt. I would understand if you were 6'1", but, you know, by all rumours are, you're not much taller than me, you fucker. So, you know.
And it was a terrible, terrible film.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point, you actually saw Matt Damon's bottom.
Oh, well, nobody needs to see that, do they?
Did you see OG's little message he left, Chris, in the group?
I haven't been in any groups.
Okay. No. I shouldn't really share this. It's top secret, but where's this message? Apparently, now this is hot off the press. Pep is walking away from Man City and going to take the job at West Ham to prove some dude in Plymouth wrong that he can manage a team without money. But
well,
he proper
money. That's the thing.
Honestly, he proper sold it because he did it really, really slow. And I'm like, what? Pep's leaving City? What's going on? And I'm scrolling through and I'm like, oh, it's a bait for Chris.
Oh,
great.
Right, yes.
He got me, though. That's great.
Dearie me. You know me. I've got to stay. If nothing else, I've got to stand by my delusion. Because otherwise, what else have I got?
Is Malcolm coming, Chris?